Coming up next on Ham Nation, we're going to tell you all about amateur radio satellites. It's going to be great. We're going to have the solar update from Dr. T and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. And Randy, K7AGE, is back. That's all coming up next here on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/hamnation. By ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 369 for September 26th, 2018. All about AMSAT. Hey, hello, everybody. It's Wednesday night. It's 8-ish. It's live TV. You know, we don't have to be here exactly on time at 8 o'clock because we record it, and you can watch it anytime you want. And it is Ham Nation. Now, tonight, Bob Heil is out doing Bob Heil stuff, but we have most of the usual suspects in. We've got Gordon West. We've got, oh, look, Gordon has a little friend. We'll get to that in just a sec. We have Amanda. We have George. And it's going to be a fun show. So let's go around the horn and see what's going on. Ladies first, Amanda, you'll be back with the chat room. But what's going on in your life?
Well, I just got through this wonderful event that we did for the first time, a 50-mile mountain bike race this last week. And that's why I wasn't here last week. Coordinating all of that, it was a lot of work, but a lot of fun, very successful. You guys stay tuned. We'll talk about it. You'll actually hear the story on AR Newsline. So stay tuned.
Oh, very good. So happy to have you on the Newsline crew. We have George up a couple of hours to my north up in Jackson, Mississippi. What's going on? Any tales from the transmitters we can look forward to coming up soon?
Yeah, maybe coming up very soon. You know, if you're going to build a 50-kilowatt AM transmitter site, you want to do it in a swamp where it's going to flood and you can't get to it when lightning strikes.
Of course.
That's my experience today. I haven't even tried to go yet. No modulation making it to the transmitter, so I just shut it down remotely, and I'm going to go out in the morning and see what's going on. So, you know, always a fun time with the weather here.
We had one at a station that I worked at that was accessible only by boat. And one thing you always had with you, right beside your toolkit, was a little 410 shotgun, just in case, a little snake charmer. So, yeah. And of course, down here, you know, we've got alligators too. So you always want to have a flashlight to shine under the truck, just to make sure you don't have those two little beady eyes shining back at you. It's rather entertaining. Well, I had a huge weekend. We went to Oklahoma and my 40th high school reunion, and I met my sister and my cousin and my aunt and just about 15 other relatives from my birth family that I had never met and didn't even know existed until back in February. So check my Facebook page. There's a ton of that stuff on Facebook. I'm not gonna drag you down with that right now, but it was the most awesome experience of my life. So it's I'm completely and totally fulfilled. I just wanted to get that in a little bit before we headed out to the West Coast and talk to Gordon West. And Gordon has the guest. We'll let him introduce his guest in a minute. But also, Gordon, you know, the FCC came out against these little jewels right here because they go out of band very easily. And I understand that you're gathering more information. We'll have more on that coming up next week, right?
That's right. And yes, I am getting more information because, as you know, they go out of band with a software upload. And that's the big question, is how they're going to enforce that. Because with Chirp software, these radios go everywhere. Well, speaking of everywhere, Don, here's Joe Spire, K6WAO, Carolyn in the background, KF6JQE, Susie in 6GLF. And Joe, we are headed into space. Hi, Joe. Welcome aboard, President of AMSAT.
Ah, thank you, Gordo. Yeah, talk about working on transmitters. They are very difficult to get to in space. The best part about it is in space, no one can hear you scream.
There you go. And that's what we were doing because Skype put us on a different mic setup, but we're ready to roll. So, Victor, if you're ready to roll, let's go ahead and talk all about Joe's great accomplishments with AMSAT. Joe?
Hey, so you're seeing what it takes to get an AMSAT membership card there. Sometimes we put your name on there. Gordo, I'll fill that in later since I know that that's your card. AMSAT stands for the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation. So Amateur SAT, AMSAT became the AMSAT name. And let's talk about amateurs because the amateurs comes from the Latin root amar or amore. And that is the love of. So amateur radio means the love of radio.
There we go. Now, Joe, how do these satellites get launched and who pays for the launch?
Well, usually they go up like a cannonball and sometimes they come down like a cannonball. But that's an Apollo rocket there. And boy, I wish we had those kind of rides. We typically go up on rockets and they're ejected out of what's called pea pods by a spring. So they cost probably about $100,000 to get a little CubeSat down. And we're switching gears real fast. So that was a rocket that was Apollo, like where we're going to have symposium in Huntsville this year. That is the International Eris on the International Space Station power supply there. And that is what we're testing, and that has power for different modules on the ISS and a secret little device on the power supply is USB ports.
And now, what about software so we can begin to track when the next satellite is going to be up and over us, Joe?
So SAT-PC-32 does that, and you can see it's showing those satellite passes for the next few passes. And a QTH there, which looks like it's Costa Mesa, California there, Gordo. Is that's your house? It doesn't have any antennas hanging off it, so it's hard to tell.
And what is the most favorite software for looking at satellite passes, programs that you would recommend from AMSAT?
Well, we recommend SAT-PC-32 because AMSAT gets a little bit of a contribution for that. We are a 501c3. So it is tax deductible as well for you U.S. hams. I know this is going out to Europe and around the world on Leah Laporte's shortwave system. So once you get the software, you can develop schedules. You can program frequencies in your handy talkie like is shown here. And that shows the AOS, the approaching acquisition of signal and the loss of signal. And that takes care of some Doppler just by flipping through some memories.
So like 5 or 10 kilohertz of Doppler on UHF, Joe?
Yeah, UHF up, you'll see some of the satellites say UV. That is like UHF up, the big letter, and V is VHF down. You'll see some that say VU or LV, whatever the mode happens to be at that time.
Wow. So you better have two operators, one just to handle the downlink Doppler shift if you're on UHF or the uplink Doppler shift if you're transmitting UHF, huh?
Well, typically the downlink you don't have to change because that comes booming in because it's direct line of sight. It's just you monitor the uplink. And we found on AO91 and 92 that basically just by going 5 kilohertz up and down, that takes care of the Doppler, so you don't need to do the 10 kilohertz.
Oh, that's great.
Here's a nice view of SAT-PC-32. You can see the Terminator and that little white spot down at the bottom. That's called the footprint of the satellite. So that's the effective range that the satellite can operate in. And every now and then we have guys doing contests that try to exceed that theoretical boundary and create something that is not possible in physics, but they do it thanks to the art of radio.
That's great, Joe.
So here's a nice ham. He's Bob Kilo 6 Romeo Echo Kilo, and he is using an aero antenna and a handy talkie to make a contact. We want to make sure that when you're using this type of setup, you flip it 90 degrees between receive and transmit, since the elements are offset 90 degrees.
Yeah, Bob did a great job, N6REK. He worked a lot of stations, and we may have some audio from him in just a few moments. But he was a hit with a lot of people looking. So what's the best radio for working an FM satellite?
I'm not sure. I'm looking at this photo, and that's just ham radio sexy right there. I'm telling you. You got all those antennas. It reminds me of the mountaintops that are porcupine tops. But there's a lot of radios out there. Full duplex is the one to use, or you can use two radios, or you can use any combinations. And there's a lot of these radios out there that are getting fairly inexpensive, and people use two radios. But, you know, for $28, your quality may suffer a little bit there, and you might have to buy four of those to get one to work.
And we always recommend that during a satellite pass that we have an external speaker, and you'll see that at the left-hand side. That lets everyone else hear both the uplink as well as the downlink audio, right, Joe?
That's exactly right. So if you're playing to the crowd there, you want them to hear the full contact. You also want to hear your voice come down through the other band's transponder or the transmitter from the satellite, so you're sure you're getting into the satellite. That's why we recommend full duplex radios.
And one of the best ways of really getting the loudness out is through an amplified speaker. This has DSP, but we run it without DSP. And boy, those satellite calls are loud and clear, huh?
That's right. And the other issue with this, if you're on the headsets and you're making a satellite call and there's a bunch of your satellite operator buddies around, we're probably making fun of you because you can't hear us.
That's right. Well, kids at Quartz Fest really got a charge out of hearing both the International Space Station working a local Quartz Fest group as well as satellites. So it doesn't take much to pull them in. How high are most of our low Earth orbit hamsats?
So a lot of the LEO satellites that are up there are around 500 to 600 kilometers in altitude, which gives you about a 9 to 12 minute pass, depending upon what the inclination, what the orbital elements are. And that last picture, you saw some homemade satellite antennas, some Yagis that were made with tape measure elements. We actually make tape measure elements for ARIS, for the International Space Station. Lou McFadden, W5DID, makes them. And the Russians call those the Lou antennas, because you can actually measure your beam width right on the antenna itself if you cut the antenna right. So there's an arrow in use. This one is not being used by, is on a tripod. It is not the Armstrong method, which is the other methods of waving them around in the air. And you just point these a few degrees at a time. There's a, looks like, hey, Barry Baines, our IPP, the immediate past president of AMSAT, is there along with Burns Fisher. This looks like Boxborough. And you can see another setup with a tripod to make contacts. There's another arrow. Remember we said to twist. So once you hear your downlink coming in, when you transmit, you twist 90 degrees, and now you're getting into the satellite with your transmitted signal.
Oh, that is just great. Now, so you're often working that arrow or the other types of antennas for both polarization as well as aiming, right?
Polarization only comes in with the linear satellites where it's right-hand circular, left-hand circular. These are the Fox satellites are a dipole, so your transmit signal will be 90 degrees out of phase if you don't twist it with the arrows. The log periodics, they're made by Elk, are another way where you don't have to twist them, but the log periodics are a wide-band antenna, so they're just, I believe it's about a dB down in gain for the antenna itself. So all about power, all about signal quality.
And speaking of signal quality, here's a little bit of what it sounds like to work a satellite, and you got to be quick.
N6REK portable, Charlie Mike, 94. N6REK, Kilo 7, Echo, Sierra 84. Kilo 7, Romeo, good to hear you again. 7-3, thanks for the contact.
That quick, that that's how it goes.
So you give your name, your basically give your call sign, which is your name. You give your position, which is your Maidenhead grid square, and a nice QSL and a nice 7.3, and move on to the next one. You got 10 minutes for the whole pass in that footprint.
Well, here we are up in your neck of the woods up in Reno, huh?
Yeah, that looks like Anthony Morrison, the head of SNARS up at the in Reno. And hey, that's Jim Siemens, the president of Elk Antennas. I personally use an autograph model Elk antenna. And I'm telling you, his signature on it adds 5 dB.
There you go. And the Elk antennas, we're going to see them big time up at Pacificon. And here's one in use, huh?
Yeah, there's one in use. There's Burns Fisher and Barry Baines, both AMSAT guys. And I'm not sure who the other gentleman is, but he's out there using the Armstrong method on that log periodic elk.
And more satellite calls.
Delta Oscar, Delta 3. Oscar, I need your full call. Alpha India 6 Delta Oscar, Alpha India 6 Delta Oscar. Gotcha, Alpha India 6 Delta Oscar and 7 AMDNO 6.
So that's how fast the satellite call goes.
And there's lots of folks working. Hey, there's Clint out there with work-sat. Doing an aero antenna and a demo here in Southern California. So there's Steve Belter with an aero doing a set of demos. I believe that's probably at Hamcation. That's what that looks like, a nice Florida location. You can tell by the shorts in winter.
Roger that.
Clint, again, he has a unique setup on this one that I want to point out. He has a nice pistol grip. That has got his arrow and his HT on it. So very ingenious.
Yeah, he's an ingenious guy. And here we are at the county fair. And let me tell you, Joe, we had an amplified speaker. And by the time we got through, we had about 100 people hanging around us.
They were probably looking for the prize there at the carnival. So the prize was amateur radio.
Now, we talked about FM satellites, but I can't wait to hear what you're going to say about the linear satellites that require a bigger rig and a more unique antenna system. All about linears, Joe?
So linear satellites come with a transponder that has a bandwidth. So like, for example, Fox 1E that's going to be launched here by AMSAT here pretty soon has a 30 kilohertz wide transmitter. And you go up on lower sideband, come down on upper sideband. It's a inverting transponder. So again, that is up on VHF, down on UHF is what it would be. So a VU type satellite. And that is our linear birds. You want to have a VHF, UHF rig that can do CW and sideband. So that takes a little more skill as a radio operator to do.
And so we're not going to be using handhelds for the sideband, obviously.
Typically, a lot of folks use like the FT-817s, FT-18s that are out there. Kind of like QRP radios that you're able to use. All modes is what you're looking for.
And the cross-polarized antennas a must, or could they get by with something a little less expensive?
You can get by with something a little less expensive, but when you start working the linear satellites or really any satellite operation, it's all about signal quality. It's all about gain. It's not about horsepower or wattage because it's all line of sight. So you want very, very high quality, some preamplifiers in your system. You want the noise cut down to the minimum because we do this squelch off and the signal quality is pulling it out of the weeds out of an FM bird. And that satellite is transmitting half a watt, 800 milliwatts at the most.
Wow. And most hams will go ahead and tie into a computer for computer tracking, huh?
Yeah. So what you see is the Yaesu G5500 rotor controller. There's an intermediate box that goes between it and the satellite software. And that gives feedback to the software program for your tracking. So there's also methods of hooking this to your receiver where it actually goes and does automatic Doppler control, a fully CAT system, automated antenna system, And you've got a complete satellite ground station, much like what's seen here. And, you know, this we get working with the league, the ARRL, to try to prevent homeowner associations complaining about ham radio antennas and everything like that. When they come knock on my door, I just tell them that that's radiating aluminum art.
I love that. And that's Neil Hayes, W6FOG, down at Quartz Fest in third week in January. And boy, he knows how to track those satellites. He's using the ICOM 9100, all computer controlled.
Oh, hey, this looks like somebody set up for an ARIS contact, amateur radio on the International Space Station. You can see he has the full tracking rotors, some nice multi-element Yagis on UHF and VHF. And then there's a nice M-squared egg beater in the background and a disc cone for reception. So part of the ARIS contact is a fully operating station and a backup.
Got to have backup.
And if you want to operate portable, portable rotation has a really nice rotor. They have adapters that are universal, adapters for the elk antenna, adapters for the arrow antennas. And they work with SAT PC32 right out of the box. And a real nice setup. I just got me one of these, and I'm still making it work. But they are real, real nice. And that's Will there from Portable Rotation. And why do we do this? Well, you know, if you make your QSO, you want a QSL card. So there's some great ones back from the SAR-X days with the shuttle. Even Challenger is in there. And, hey, there's a W1AW. That's Newington, Connecticut, the headquarters of the ARRL. So the ARRL is a longtime supporter of ARIS, along with benefactors SCAN, the Astronaut Office, and CASIS, and AMSAT, of course. So a lot of consortiums and groups to make this stuff happen.
Oh, that is terrific. And, you know, we always enjoy ladies on the air. Here's Christy, KB6LTY, a regular AMSAT enthusiast, doing Route 66, Whiskey 6 Delta this past weekend over the satellite.
Whiskey 6 Delta, QSL. That's my question, I think.
Whiskey 6 Delta, 07, echo
Zulu
Romeo,
So FM satellites are fun, but the linear satellites, wow, that's going to be something to hear.
Yeah, the linear satellites, you get a little more bandwidth. There's me and my lovely bride. That is the astronaut pose taught to us by Mike Fink, the head of the astronaut office. And he has Deke Slayton's position in the Apollo program. And I tell you, Mike was a great operator for ARIS, and we hope to get him back up there in space soon.
Oh, that is terrific. Well, Victor, if you want to come back to us, and Joe, how about saying what we as ham radio operators can do to support the satellite operation of AMSAT as well as ARISS?
Okay, so there's two things. You can go to the AMSAT website, amsat.org, and there's contributions there to look at where it says donate under the donate click. You can sign up for a symposium in Huntsville. It's the first weekend in November, and we're at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. We'll have tours of Marshall Space Flight Center on Sunday as well. So there's all kinds of neat stuff to do. If you're in the Southeast U.S., come join us. And if you're over at AMSAT UK's colloquium or the Radio Society of Great Britain in Milton Keynes, which is near Bletchley Park, you know, I'm coming across the pond to be there. It'll be the first time that AMSAT DL, AMSAT UK, and AMSAT North American presidents are all in the same spot. We're going to have some powwows and see if we can do some cooperation with our European friends. So if you're listening from Europe, come across the channel, and I'm coming across the pond, so no excuses.
And if you're listening from the USA, support AMSAT. So, Joe, here's a little paperwork that you can take back for AMSAT. And we so much appreciate you being here, you and Carolyn, to talk all about what's happening in space. Joe?
So, Gordo just did something extraordinary. He hit a donation level for AMSAT that gets him a CubeSat challenge coin.
Oh, wow.
So, right there is the challenge coin. It is for Fox, so it has the Fox emblem on it. And Gordo, there you go. Congratulations there to go with your Eris Challenge coins and your other ham radio memorabilia. Well, so we have a lot of launches coming up. We're trying to get Fox 1 Cliff, named for Clint Bouchard, K7RR, who is a silent key, but he supported CubeSats. Hopefully that'll go up before the end of the year. And then the Fox 1E linear transponder will go up before the end of the year. That one might slip until end of January, February sometime, depending on launch schedules. We don't have control over those. Eris would love your support. They have a fundraiser. Go on fundraiser, look up Eris, and they're trying to build that interoperable power supply and new radios to go up to the ISS. We're sending up a packet module on a Progress 71 spacecraft to replace the existing one up there that the space gremlins, after 15 years, have started playing with. And we'll get the packet back up operational very, very good. Donate to that fundraiser for Eris. I think we've raised about $9,700 out of $150,000 that we need. So we need you to cooperate and support amateur radio in space.
All right. Well, Joe, thank you so much. Carolyn, thanks for accompanying Joe. And we just hope all of you will support AMSAT and we'll keep those satellites flying. Thanks so much, Joe. And Don, what do you think? Pretty exciting, huh?
I think it's amazing. In fact, I've got this little jewel right here that I bought from the AMSAT booth at Dayton a number of years ago. So I did a little bit to help out as well, because I know you guys get a little portion of the purchase price of the Elk antenna. And I love this thing. This is a, and especially with the carry case, it's just, man, it's just, it's the best. So, Joe, you guys are doing great work over there, and we certainly appreciate you coming on Ham Nation tonight. So thanks a lot, man. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. And it was great to have Gordo here. This has taken us almost a year to get set up. So, you know, it takes a little time to get everything. Great show on Ham Nation. And I saw Bob Heel Saturday night in his purple socks. So he was all in on it. It's all about getting youth and involved in it. And satellites do it. Like it's, yep. You know, like I say, it's the big three: space, robotics, or programming. And yep. It seems like amateur radio in space has all three. So one day we'll have the app.
Great. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Guys. Yep. 7-3. Yep. It's all about STEM. You got to get the kids in those STEM programs in school. Right now, we want to talk about FreshBooks, because FreshBooks is helping us put this particular episode of Ham Nation on your computer or smartphone or whatever it is you happen to be watching us on. FreshBooks is an amazing piece of accounting software. Most accounting software is built for accountants and not business owners. Well, FreshBooks is bucking that trend. FreshBooks is an owner-first accounting platform that puts you, the small business owner, back in control of your business. FreshBooks approachable accounting is a full industry standard double entry accounting a program that enables painless automatic bookkeeping and reporting. You can quickly generate and access accounting reports such as the general ledger, trial balance, chart of accounts in the FreshBooks dashboard, and share those reports with your accountant or your financial advisor. Send professional looking invoices in seconds. You can see your sent, viewed, paid, and overdue invoices. Accept online payments directly from your invoice and get paid an average of twice as fast. Create proposals with rich text content and images. Request your client's e-signature as they accept proposals. You can send invoices, estimates, and proposals in multiple languages with FreshBooks. And FreshBooks will automatically connect you to your bank account and update expenses daily. Import your expenses in bulk or take a picture of a receipt, upload it, and FreshBooks does the rest. Keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks mobile app. And if you're still conquering the day-to-day tasks of creating invoices and collecting payments, FreshBooks is the magic wand you've been looking for. And if you have great ambitions and need robust accounting, FreshBooks can grow with you. No matter what your accounting needs are, FreshBooks will help put you in the driver's seat. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time, and capture expenses, and get back to doing what you love. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation. Enter HamNation in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/HamNation. And we certainly thank them for their support of HamNation. Now, it looks like we've got Randy back with us with a video. So let's go ahead and check out what K7AGE is up to. It's been a while.
I'm back. Hi, Randy, K7AGE, in my new ham shack. It's been a busy year and a half having a new house built for us. I'm recording this in September of 2018. We moved in at the end of June of 2018, and we basically broke ground around June of 2017. So it's been a real busy year, plus a lot of work and planning and prep years before that. We actually bought the property, I think, in about 2005. So it's been a busy time. So we're now moved in. We're pretty much settled in the main areas of the house. And now the ham shack and the basement and the garage is starting to get attention. So this will be the first of hopefully a lot of videos coming up as I progress with different projects in the ham shack here. So let's take a little look around. So many years ago, I used a free home 3D design program and laid out the floor plan of the house. It allowed me to place furniture and things within the house. So we used that to get an idea of, you know, how we would fit in the house, including how I would lay out my den slash ham shack. So you can see in the far wall here is where my radio equipment will go. And I have a pair of desks that are parallel to each other. And I like that because I can look out the window here and look down into Gold Beach, which is about 3 miles away. In my ham shack here, I have electronics workbench, which I have not had a dedicated space in many, many years. So I'm looking forward to getting that set up. On the other end of the wall is bookcases and storage. And I have my television over there. I want to get a larger one. My sofa, my recliner. This is my man cave ham radio shack. So it is pretty much being populated like the way I had thought my design would be many years ago. So this is the beginnings of my new electronics workbench. I got this from a ham friend of mine, Dave, who has moved out of the area now, and he was quite a collector of boat anchors and electronic parts, and you know, I would trade him empty moving boxes for basically a lot of good stuff, and you'll see some more later on in the video. So anyway, this was a workbench that he had that he gave me, and I kind of de-rusted some of the metalwork and re-spray painted it. It's got a nice 6 foot long by 30 inch solid maple butcher block top. I'm going to put a shelf arrangement on the top of this, and I'm using these 2x4 basics plastic shelving things that you use 2x4s for the verticals and 2x4s for the horizontals. But I'm having our cabinet maker cut me some cabinet plywood that's finished on both sides to use for the shelves instead of the 2x4s, and it'll be much squarer and flatter. And I'll put pegboard across the back so I can hang things on there. It'll have a work area on the left side that's larger, and the area on the right is where I'll have a lot of my test gear stacked up. So some of my test gear that I've collected in the last couple months, I picked up this Tektronix TM500 test frame up at the CPAC Hamfest. It has a digital voltmeter, a frequency counter, a function generator, and a power supply. I got that whole frame for $90, and it was all working. The guy had it running there at Seaside, and I brought it home. Then a couple weeks ago, at our local club picnic, I bought this other Tektronix TM500 frame, and it has two frequency counters, another digital voltmeter, different models than what's in the first frame, and a 80 megahertz oscilloscope. And I plugged that in when I got home, and it all lit up. And I think that basically works. I haven't had time to extensively test that yet. So I'm really looking forward for a lot of this new test gear to be put on my workbench here. And should be fun with a lot of videos coming up. I have so many projects I want to build. So many. I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be great. Down in the basement of the house is where I have a lot of stuff stored. Before the movers moved us, we basically moved around 250 boxes ourselves. Now, a lot of those have been unpacked. That's part of my trading material with Dave for some gear. and including this pile of Heathkit stuff here. So he says, you want this? He says, I have no idea how it all works, if it works. Some of it's in pretty rough shape. But I said, yeah, okay. I don't know if I bit off more than I can work on, but we get a lot of rain in Oregon, so I'm going to be on this workbench a lot here, hopefully during the rainy season. So, but I have boxes down here of all my radio gear, my parts, and oh, it's a lot of this has to get organized and brought upstairs here to the ham shack. So, looking forward to that. So I think that's all I'm going to show you right now. There'll be a lot more coming up. I'm going to have a tower installed. There's a lot of work to do on that yet. Get the workbench set up, some of the radios. I want to get a wire up quickly so I can get on probably FT8 here with a limited setup. But I'm back, and this is the first of hopefully many more videos coming along at a more timely fashion. So a couple upcoming things, since this is being recorded in September 2018, I'll be at PacificCon in about 3 weeks now. I'm looking forward to seeing all my friends and viewers there. A couple weeks later, I'm hopping on an airplane and flying to Huntsville for the AMSAT convention. So that'll be fun. I think the last time I was to an AMSAT convention was Orlando when AO40 was still in the lab, and we all got to tour that. And in January, I'll be tooling off to Quartzsite and for the week-long Hamfest in the desert there. So, and again, you can follow me on Twitter. I've been routinely posting a lot of stuff on Twitter. I haven't been doing much on Google+. Twitter's the place to follow me almost on a day-to-day basis. So, and I have one more thing here to show you that's part of the ham shack. This is going to be great for the long contest or the long workbench projects. I have my own full bathroom right here off the ham shack, including a shower. So, you know, if I had a refrigerator and a coffee pot, I would have it made in here. Stay tuned. Randy, K7AGE.
Heard it, worked it, logged it. It's time to get the transceiver that's best suited for your lifestyle. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. See how you can make the most out of contest season with these transceivers. The competitive edge you've been looking for, raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this flagship HF 50 MHz transceiver, the IC7851. Reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. The IC7610 is the SDR every ham wants, and just in time for contesting season. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling, 110 RMDR, independent dual receiver, dual digicell. IC7300 is changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. Register for some great swag prizes. They've got hats and T-shirts. While you're there, learn how you could win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for September, it's going to be the ICOM ID 5100A VHF UHF dual band D-Star transceiver. It's got a large touchscreen display, simultaneous FM-FM, FM-DV, or DV-DV dual watch in the receiver, built-in GPS, and there's an available Bluetooth board that'll allow it to work with the RSMS-1 Android app. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode of Ham Nation, and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And another great ICOM rig that you might want to win is this one sitting right here in front of me. It's the ICOM IC7300 software-defined radio, a great entry-level radio, regardless of what type of radio it is. And to top it off, it's a software-defined rig. Very great features in it. Touchscreen operation. You've seen it before. It's probably one of the most popular radios on the market these days, especially in that category. And I've got all the stuff to go with it here. The MFJ switching power supply, Heil BM17 headsets, the new Heil emergency communicator headsets. These things sound great. I've tried them out now, and they really work great. Also, we've got a Heil ICM microphone here, made for earlier ICOM rigs. I've got an MFJ big ear antenna here with the 17-foot telescopic mast and the loading coil here at the bottom, along with the counterpoise, and some of Gordo's books. So if you need to upgrade to get on the air on HF, we've got your choice of either the general or the extra class exam book there. And 50 feet of coax, because you're going to want to hook this up and get on the air with it right away. Great setup there, especially for portable operations. I don't see how you could beat it. Oh, and just to top it off, a pair of Amateur Logic faux gold PL259 connectors right here. Not recommended for soldering, but strictly for decorative purposes. Last set I've got, too, so somebody is going to win all that. You can get all the details. We're celebrating the 13th anniversary of Amateur Logic. Go to amateurlogic.tv/contest. Register to win right there. Get all the details. We'll tell you there what you need to know, all the qualifications and everything. We'll be drawing and giving that away in October. So if you haven't registered already, go check it out. You certainly want to get in on that. And I've got, as long as we're giving away stuff here, last week I said I had an MFJ coax switch here, a heavy-duty coax switch from MFJ. It's the, what is the model number of this? MFJ 2703. It's good up to 2 kilowatts up to 30 megahertz, and 1 kilowatt up to 200 megahertz. These are very heavy-duty switches. I use this particular switch myself, not this one, but one just like it, and it's really worked great. No issues with it ever. I think you would really like one of these in your ham shack. Unfortunately, I've already given this one away because I asked a question last week. Crystal detectors were also known as what? And we were talking about crystal radios, you may remember. There's another name for a detector. I wanted to know what that was. And Dan, W6DPM, knew the answer. He said crystal detectors were also known as demodulators. And that's correct, because when you detect the AM signal, basically you're demodulating it. Now, I had a number of other guesses in there that were close. Not exactly what I was looking for, but Dan's the one that drew the random number, and he had the answer, actually, that I was looking for. But other answers were rectifier. Well, yeah, it is a rectifier. Discriminator, you could say that, but that's more likely for FM. Cat whisker, well, yeah, there were some cat whiskers. Our coherer, which was actually used before the crystals were used in the very early crystal radios. So congratulations, Dan. We'll be getting that MFJ three-way coax switch out to you right away. For next week, I've got another prize here. And, you know, it's good to see Randy back on tonight. He's been observing video silence for a good while, so great to see what he has been up to. And looking at all that test equipment, I thought, well, maybe we'll have a test equipment question tonight. And so I came up with one, and I think I'm going to get similar answers from most folks who answer this one. But what I want to know is, if you could only have one piece of test equipment, what would it be? And if you can answer that, and there's no wrong answer to it, it's just whatever piece of test equipment, and only one that you could have, you're going to win a copy of Gary Drash K9 DJT's Ham Radio is Alive and Well. This is a book. You know, Gary had been into ham radio when he was younger. He dropped out for decades because of school and family and work. And he finally got back in and checked up to see what was going on with ham radio. He gives us the update in here, tells us about the newer modes, and from an old guy's perspective that's just come back into the hobby. So good read there. If you'd like to win that, well, then tell me, what one piece of test equipment would you want? HamNationContest at gmail.com. Send that to me, and we'll see who wins next week. And now, here's Don to bring us up to date on what's going on with DX Engineering and maybe a little news.
Yeah, we'll do Newsline first. You know, for me, it would have to be the old Simpson vacuum tube voltmeter that I had back 40 years ago when I was studying electronics in high school. It had the roll top front on it. You remember those things? You probably have one.
I have a Simpson 260, but a vacuum tube voltmeter, no, I never had a Simpson one. I used several other brands, but yeah, you could measure a lot of stuff with that.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
know it's the only piece of test equipment I would want, but certainly a good choice.
Well, yeah, certainly not the only. I had an old oscilloscope, too, that I actually I went to pick up. It was rack mounted, and I bought it at a garage sale when I was in high school. And I had it plugged in and was trying to get it working. And I reached in to pick it up. And because it was rack mounted, there was no back on it. And I got 110 volts across those two fingers. And
ouch.
Only did that once. Only did that
yeah.
once.
You
that's kind of has. Yeah. Like my daddy said, that'll learn you want it, boy. Hey, you know, the folks over at WTWW are simulcasting this whole thing because, well, they have nothing better to do. But, of course, they play the classic rock and roll, great oldies, you know, when they're not doing the ham radio programming. And they're on right now, 5085 with 100,000 watts and 15.810. And if you have anything you'd like to let them know about ham radio related, or just email it a request as well, WTWW, email at WTWW.us. And they've got some of the greatest disc jockeys from the rock and roll era from the 60s and 70s from great radio stations. And for some stupid reason, they're going to put me on there as well. So expect that coming up in a few weeks when we get that all hooked up. It'll be embarrassing. I guess they're putting me on there to make everybody else sound better, because that's exactly what's going to happen. Let's go ahead and get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline and see what Dr. T's got going. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2134, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 26, 2018. One of the year's deadliest weather systems proved a challenge for hams as they kept communications open in the storm-wrecked Philippines.
In the northern Philippines, Typhoon Mangkhut quickly became the deadliest storm on the earth this year, striking on September the 15th. The Philippine Amateur Radio Association activated for emergency communications at the National Telecommunications Commission regional office. Locally, many affiliated groups established VHF radio communications at the Emergency Operations Center in Clark Freeport. Winds were clocked at 155 kilometers or 96 miles per hour, with gusts as much as 190 kilometers per hour or 118 miles per hour. By Monday, Mayor Victorio Palandigan of Itagon, one of the hardest-hit province towns, reported that dozens were believed to have been killed in a landslide and that rescuers would likely not find survivors. Having destroyed homes and taken lives, the typhoon next made its way to South China. Before the storm moved on, 32,000 families were believed to have been affected in central Luzon. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
Hams in the U.S. responded to Hurricane Florence when it struck the southern states. Important messages were carried by the VOIP Hurricane Net.
Whiskey 4 INK with another damage report.
KD1 CY is on. Go ahead.
Okay, this is the town of Pine Knoll Shores, North Carolina. Currently about 50% of their streets are not passable.
That was the sound of the VOIP Hurricane Net. Rob is also director of operations for the net, which began its 35-hour activation early that same Thursday, September 13th. Rob was joined by net controls in Illinois, New Hampshire, and Maryland, and check-ins from around the world helping pass emergency and priority traffic, as well as surface, wind, and weather reports. Rob told Newsline that even after the net formally ended at 8 p.m. Friday, informal listening continued until around noon Saturday.
We had people in Europe. I saw actually some Zulima calls in New Zealand.
As the world listened, some rescues unfolded too.
We also handled a piece of emergency traffic with a water rescue.
The effects of Florence will be felt in the American South for some time. And as Rob pointed out, hams will be ready, whether they are needed or not. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Andy Morrison, K9AWM.
In Huntsville, Alabama, the stage is being set for satellite enthusiasts.
Time is running out for registration for the 36th Annual AMSAT Space Symposium in Huntsville, Alabama. This year's gathering will be at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, and hotel accommodation will be at the Marriott next door. Organizers are asking that hams planning to attend book their stay no later than the 10th of October, and if they're staying at the hotel, use the reference number M-B-I-H-H-X-T-A. That'll get you a group rate of $104 per night. Coming just a few weeks after the annual Huntsville Hamfest, this gathering will be held November 2nd through the 4th and will include AMSAT North America's annual general meeting. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jack Parker, W8ISH.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Robert Broomhead, VK3DN, Andy Morrison, K9AWM, Jack Parker, W8ISH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We may have calmed down from a set of solar storms, but we're still in for a bit of a bumpy ride. How will this affect you? That story and more in the news this week. Space weather this week is remaining a bit unsettled. We'd originally bumped up to storm levels a few days ago for some fast wind that came from this northern coronal hole. Now, the wind actually hit us a bit harder than anticipated because we thought this coronal hole was pretty far north, and so it may not last for very long. But in actuality, the wind actually bumped us to storm levels for about 6 hours, and then it kept us at active conditions for about another day. So it gave us some gorgeous aurora views, which was fantastic break, considering I expected things to be, you know, getting a little dull. But since then, we've kind of calmed down a little bit. The wind speed has definitely died down, but we're not down to quiet conditions. And the main reason for that is because we're dealing with a remnant coronal hole that's actually quite wide. And it's not really letting the solar wind calm down all that much. So we're getting kind of pockets of fast wind here and there that keep things a little bit elevated. So this is good news for aurora photographers, especially at high latitudes. You guys are going to be enjoying some decent sporadic aurora over the next 3 or 4 days, possibly, before things begin to calm down. And then after about a week or so, we're going to be start seeing some influence from some other coronal holes that are rotating back into Earth view from the sun's backside. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are expecting that coronal hole, that remnant coronal hole, to be rotating through the Earth strike zone over the next couple days. And we might even see a little bit of a southern polar hole influence. So we're going to be expecting pretty much unsettled conditions because it's not really all that much to work with, but it's not enough to keep us really quiet. At high latitudes, NOAA's expecting unsettled conditions with about a 20% chance of a minor storm. So you aurora photographers at high latitudes, latitudes, you could get some sporadic aurora show that might actually be worthwhile. Now, mid-latitudes, we're also expecting unsettled conditions, but not much in the way of aurora for you, and things will continue to quiet down as we go further through the week. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is still in the green when it comes to solar flares. We have a spotless sun right now, and it's going to continue that way, we think, for quite a bit. Now, this is good news for GPS users. The day side is fantastic. There is no problems with reception because we're not expecting any radio blackouts, but it does mean that we have a low solar flux. So this is bad news for amateur radio and shortwave radio responders. You guys are dealing with poor radio propagation right now, and it's going to continue like that on Earth's day side and probably also the night side. Might not be all that much better. So unfortunately, this is going to continue easily for the next week and possibly 2 weeks until we get a little bit more solar storm activity. Now, also because we are at solar minimum, I know I sound like a broken record, but we have more cosmic ray penetration than normal. So you frequent flyers, and this includes air crew who fly more than 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are at the marginal levels for radiation dose. This also now is including prenatal passengers for long duration flights. So please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is beginning to quiet down. We're sitting at unsettled conditions right now and will likely stay that way as a remnant coronal hole rotates into the Earth strike zone. And if the models are correct, then we're going to get a little bit of an influence from the polar coronal hole, get some fast wind from that. And that could keep us at unsettled conditions easily over the next 3 to 4 days. So your aurora photographers at high latitudes, be sure to get some shots because you'll get some sporadic aurora, and then share it with the rest of us looky-loos who aren't getting much action right now. Now, GPS operators, you guys are also very happy because we have a spotless sun and no risk for radio blackouts. We also have low solar flux, which means your GPS reception on Earth's day side looks pretty good. And then with the unsettled conditions on the Earth's night side, which helps kind of stabilize the upper atmosphere, that also means your GPS reception should be pretty decent on the night side as well, even at low latitudes. So you're looking good. Now, amateur radio operators and shortwave operators, well, that's where the bad news comes in. This low solar flux means poor radio propagation, and that's probably going to continue easily for the next week, maybe even longer before things begin to look a little bit better. So when it comes to discussing the last man standing, looks like CW and maybe the new digital modes are the way to go. I'm Tamitha Scoe. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, Dr. T. Always nice to have you on the program with us. And, of course, I say it every week and goes without saying. You need to be following her on Twitter for sure. You get the absolute latest information. And also check her out at spaceweatherwoman.com. And if you'd like to support her on her Patreon channel, then I would suggest that as well, because you get access to some stuff before the rest of us do. But anyway, she's just she's a great resource for what we do here in ham radio, and we just are so appreciative of having her on the team. You know, we have a lot of after-show nets, and one of those is the DMR net. And if you've been considering dipping your toe into the DMR pool, there's an easy and affordable way to enter the world of digital mobile radio, and you can do that via DX Engineering. They have all the answers and the technical support that you might need to get started in this growing segment of ham radio, and it's growing fast. DX Engineering offers feature-rich handheld DMR transceivers from two leading providers, Bridgecom and Elinco. I didn't know Elinco had DMR, but they do. From Elinco comes compact and trusty UHF and VHF single and dual-mode DMR transceivers. And, you know, Elinco's been around a long time. That's a good product. Elinco's heavy-duty DJ AXD series DMR HD transceivers are built for reliable digital communications even in harsh environments. Both VHF and UHF models operate in both Tier 1 and Tier 2 with RF output selectable from 1 to 5 watts. They give you spectacular audio clarity, easy-to-read backlit screen, and they come with a lithium-ion battery. The DJ MD40T 70-centimeter digital HD can operate in analog, digital, and mixed modes, has a 1,000-channel programmable in 64 channels per zone. It's great for use at the mall, the theme park, construction site, warehouse, wherever dependable communications is important. And premiered at Dayton Hamvention 2018 was the Elinco DJ MD5T VHF UHF 5-watt dual mode HT. It's a lightweight, but it gives you a ton of features. 1.77-inch TFT color LCD display, VFO, memory recall switch, 4,000 memory channels, individual group, all call modes and more, available with or without GPS reporting. Bridgecom also makes some great DMR transceivers. They're easy to use and really easy on the budget. Two models are available at DX Engineering, the D500 2-meter, D500 70-centimeter. They work in both analog, narrowband FM, and DMR, which is the TDMA digital modes. They're fully compatible with DMR Tier 1 and 2 protocols, and they're wideband FM capable. They feature a ruggable die-cast metal frame and large color LCD screen. It's easy to read, clear graphics, and text message capabilities. The units are IP54 water-resistant. They weigh less than 10 ounces. They each provide a selectable 2 or 5 watts and come with a 1,000-channel capacity. You can talk for hours with a 2,200 lithium-ion battery. The D500 transceiver programming software is available as a free download from Bridgecom's product support page, and a required programming cable is sold separately. DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. Proven products, expert advice. DX Engineering is helping you shrink the glove. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. A great partner of what we do for years and years and years. And we appreciate DX Engineering. We certainly do. And we also appreciate Amanda. And she's got the chat room tonight. Amanda, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. You guys are talking about your test equipment, the thing that you can't live without. So I asked Jeff, he's in the other room watching TV. Let me lug this sucker up here to show you what he can't live without.
It's show and tell with Amanda.
It's actually not that.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
This is his service monitor.
Yeah.
For repeaters, mostly. He uses it for radios. If a radio's not working right, you stick that sucker on the service monitor, find out what the problems are. George, I bet you use those a lot.
I don't have a service monitor, but I have something pretty similar. It's a spectrum analyzer that I use. And, if you've never had something like that before, those are really nice once you learn what to do with it.
Exactly. The 1K tones, anything you need to do, those suckers are going to do it for you. Now, they ain't cheap, so no. Don't expect much. I have to show you guys this. This is from Bob this weekend in Albuquerque when he was at the Duke City Ham Fest. I don't think it will focus, but he wrote on a napkin and said, "We miss you," and sent me the picture. So
nice.
I missed you guys too in Albuquerque. That was sad that I couldn't make it. Busy, busy weekends. All right, one other announcement I have is that Dan N9LVS is still looking for some videos for the Show Me Your Shack, or give him some fun things that he can put together a video for us for Ham Nation, and he'd really appreciate it. So, all right, let's get to some questions. Joe is still here, right, with the Gordo?
No, they're not.
Oh, they're not? Okay. I thought they were going to stick around. All right, another time. Now, this is kind of an interesting thing, George, while you're talking about entry-level HF rig and the 7300. A lot of people in the chat room are talking, that was not my entry-level rig by any means. So I just out of curiosity, what was your entry-level HF rig that you started with?
My first rig was a Yaesu FT-857D. And I've still got that rig. It's got a few issues, but I've still got it. It still works. Just can't read the display very good. And from there, I went to a used TS-430S. And
okay.
I've owned a couple of those and a 450. And I'm just going to say it. They're nice rigs if they work right. But out of the three used ones I bought, they all had some issues. I had to work on them.
What about you, Don? What was your entry-level rig?
ICOM 738. I won it at a ham fest. I had been a ham less than a year, and I won that ICOM 738, and I was still a tech. It was a few years before I upgraded to Tech Plus. Remember Tech Plus, so I could use it on 10. And then a couple of years after that to General, so I could use most of the capabilities of that radio. But before I upgraded, we took it to Field Day and used it as a Field Day radio for years and years and years. ICOM 738, great radio. It survived Katrina because it was above the floodwaters. And in fact, I just sold it actually just a few years ago. I had it forever. A funny story about that. When Tyler was just a little baby crawling around, I had bought an ICOM 746, and I had relegated the 738 to backup use and for Field Day at the club and stuff. And so Tyler would crawl into my office, and it was on the floor. And he loved Cheetos back then, and he had a habit of eating Cheetos, and he would play with the knobs on the radio. And I happened to look down there one time, and the whole entire front of that 738 was just encrusted with orange Cheeto residue. Took me forever to get that thing cleaned off, and that's how he got the nickname Junior Knob Twister.
Oh, I love Cheetos. That's my nemesis. By the way, Jeff, come here real quick. What was your entry-level HF rig? He bought like a Yaesu or something on eBay, and FT301AD. And it was modified for 11 meters, so it was all screwy. And I remember I'm always checking in on that. This is a true story. And this is before I was a ham, and we lived in this very small apartment, and I used to get so irritated because he'd be working these traffic nets and stuff, and they'd constantly be going, "Hey, buddy, you're drifting off a frequency," because it was all messed up, and he'd have to, come on back to us, and And I could hear it through our TV speakers, no less. So that's where I became familiar with Q signals and like signal reports. I already knew how to run these nets before I became a ham, because thank goodness, because it came through the TV while I was watching CSI. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
That's funny. That was the moan back radio. You're off frequency. Moan back.
Yep. That's it. That's exactly right. They're like, You're almost there. And he's like, oh man, I got to find something else. And then, long story short, I was doing printing, and this very kind lady came in to get her husband's obituary printed, and she had his QSL card picture on the obituary. And I said, "Oh, yeah, your husband was a ham," and we talked, and she invited us up to her house to take some of his equipment extra. And that's where I think it was the 746, the ICOM that Jeff got from her. Anyhow, that's what really enhanced us into getting into more HF stuff. So anyhow, right. Long story short, it was a great experience. And I think that's what really kickstarted me getting into amateur radio, because I wanted to collect more QSL cards, because that's what really got me going. Okay. I do actually have a real question for you guys. I'll give this one to George. W8DVD David wants to know, when or where does my shack need a power conditioner?
If you've got really bad utilities, really bad AC, you might want one. They're not bad to have. A little pricey. Probably most shacks, but don't have those though.
I have one at the print shop, but that's just because we have really shoddy power, and it's sporadic at best. But do you use anything out there, Don, in the backcountry?
No, we've got nice solid electricity, and I've never had a reason to. Although what you could do, you could always put your radio on a UPS if you have like an uninterruptible power supply for your computer. Because, everything goes through a battery and it levels everything out anyway. And then plus, you'll have a little bit of operating time too if your power does go out. So that's probably not a bad backup.
Well, there you go. Well, we've already run over time just a little bit. It was really nice to have Joe from AMSAT on the show, by the way. We kind of lack in covering some satellite working, and I really appreciate that. By the way, anybody that's interested in working SATs or getting involved in it, also follow AMSAT on Twitter, and you're going to run into a whole bunch of hams that are strictly SAT workers, and you're going to love to follow their Twitter feeds because you're going to learn a lot. Randy can back me up on this. They're constantly encouraging people to get on the sats or thanking the people that they worked on them. They do complain when there's a lid on their sats, but hey, it's all lessons learned. So anyhow, let's wrap it up here. I'll go over the nets that we're having for tonight. There's not going to be a 20-meter net. I guess conditions are really that bad. Tamitha does not lie. It's bad. Let's see, 40 meters, we're going to be on 7192, I believe. DMR, we're on TAC 311. By the way, have a lot of fun working Brandmeister stuff here locally. It's a lot of fun. D-Star, 14 Charlie. And then let's not forget the Echolink net on Dew Drop In. So that's what I've got. Everybody, back to you, Don.
I also thought I saw in the chat room 3908 for 80 meters. So that might be something to think about as well.
I did not get an 80-meter announcement. Whoever's doing that, send me an email. I'll make sure I put it on my list.
Yeah, you were yakking. You were yakking and not looking at the screen when it came over, and I just happened to see it. So I put my glasses on to make sure I saw it right, and there you go. So check out 80 meters tonight. Amanda, thank you so much. You're just a huge part of this, and we miss you when you're gone. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. All right, George, any final words for us tonight before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I hear it's raining again out there. I just hope it doesn't come down like it did earlier today, because I don't want to get stuck in the swamp. Got a four-wheel drive, but don't have mud grip tires. So got my fingers crossed. Maybe we'll see y'all next year with the not so exciting tales from the transmitter. If it doesn't go my way, though, all bets are off.
There you go. Just stay safe out there. That's the main thing. All right. We had Gordon on here, too. Gordon and Joe Spire. So thanks to those guys. And, of course, Dr. T and you in the chat room and you watching. We couldn't and wouldn't do it without you. So we do appreciate it. And we will see you all here next Wednesday. I will not be here next Wednesday because next Wednesday, well, actually, starting Sunday is the beginning of the big car show down in Biloxi, Mississippi that I go to every year, Cruising the Coast. There were over 7,000 registered cars last year. It's a huge, huge car show. If you want to check out and you like classic cars, check out cruisingthecoast.com. And it's an amazing car show. Biggest tourist event in Mississippi. Has nothing to do with ham radio, but you know what? It's one of my passions, and we go down there every year. We've never missed one. So we'll see you the following Wednesday, but hopefully Bob will be back next Wednesday. And the regular cast of regulars will be on as well. So, and nice to have Randy on as well. Nice to see you feathering your nest, my friend. Nice
Welcome
to see
back,
you feathering
Randy.
That nest. Yeah, we missed you.
I just read your text message. I'm glad I wasn't drinking coffee because it would have been all over everything. You are a bad, bad man.
It's not politically correct.
No.
As is most things with me, it's not politically correct. So that's probably a good place to just go. I'm going to give myself the hook, and we'll see you next week, or everyone else will see you next week. I'll be driving my Trans Am next week. 7-3 from all of us here at Ham Nation. We'll see y'all later on. So good night. Love you guys.
73. And by the way, everyone, tell Don happy belated birthday.
Yes, yesterday
He's
was my
12.
Birthday. Yes. Mentally, yeah. Thank you for that. All right. Good night, everybody.
7-3.